The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Jessica, and you're listening to the Asian Madness Podcast. Hi, listeners. Welcome back to another episode from the Asian Madness. As always, hope everyone's doing fun things and making the most out of your short time on Earth. Unless you're out there being mean, then maybe don't do that. Without further ado, today's topic of discussion is probably slightly more well-known to the broader audience, mostly because it's a Japanese case. And I'm pretty sure I've heard other podcasters cover this case. Although this was on my radar, I would like to thank Melissa for bringing it up quite a while ago, actually. So thank you, Melissa. I've already mentioned this case is going to be from Japan, so you kind of know it's not going to be a feel-good story. The opposite, actually. The land of urban legends and crazy-ass crimes. Generally safe. But when something happens, it really happens. I feel like every time I go on Instagram, the algorithm continuously shoves Japan travel-related reels into my face. I get it. It's a beautiful place, super cool and modern. The food is amazing, etc. It's almost always positive, but as we know, where there is light, there is a shadow. Today we will cast light on the story of one of the most infamous serial killers of 20th century Japan. A man whose crimes were so atrocious, so inhumane, that for years, most Japanese news outlets refused to go into details of how he went about with his doings. While I agree society nowadays tends to give a lot of stage time to bad people, is it really all bad to discuss it? Could it perhaps help others who may be potential victims? Or perhaps their refusal to talk about him only gave him more liberty to go on and commit 7 murders in his lifetime. But another question is he actually a serial killer? Be warned though, there will be some graphic mentions of torture and murder. Let's begin. Today's monster is a man named Matsunaga Futoshi. Such a regular Japanese name for such a not regular man, and obviously not meant in a good way. But who was he? How did he become whatever it is that he became? Futoshi was born on the 28th of April, 1961, in Fukuoka, Japan's 6th largest city, located on the northern shore of Kyushu Island. His family was said to have been quite wealthy, his father owning his own tatami shop. As a child, he displayed remarkable intelligence and academic prowess, and on top of that, people loved him. You think of terrible people who do terrible things, and we expect them to be disliked or bullied or an outcast, but other times we find wolves in sheep's clothing. He had impeccable social skills and was very well liked. He was doted on, especially by his mom and grandmother. Ask anyone about Futoshi, and they would tell you what a smooth talker he was. But this social adeptness wasn't necessarily accompanied by good intentions. Some teachers saw through the grades and the charisma and took note of his rebellious behavior and manipulative ways. Futoshi lied about certain achievements and easily convinced others of his abilities. He was also prone to losing his temper in class and talking back when he was scolded or for being too loud or causing a ruckus. But that shouldn't be too alarming, right? He was a child after all, and children throw tantrums and sometimes disrespect others. It's not like he was breaking laws left and right. According to many around him, he was just energetic. Oh, he was just extroverted. Very lively. Very excitable. Honestly, I don't really fault people for thinking this way, as this tends to be the explanation when it comes to many kids. They're immature. They will grow up. They'll learn to be better. But I guess it's not always the case, because this boy would only get worse in the years to come. The development would be slow, though. And like most people, he would first attempt at a normal life. Futoshi got married to a woman when he was just 19 years old, around the year 1980. And he even had a child with her. But the typical family life wasn't for Futoshi. Not everyone is meant for marriage at such a young age. In fact, Futoshi allegedly had 10 mistresses, one of whom was a kindergarten teacher named Ogata Junko, who also happened to be a high school classmate of his. Junko's family was pretty well off, and she was known to be very kind and gentle. But this would eventually change in the coming years. Futoshi's infidelity was probably the first sign of his psychopathic tendencies. Obviously, not everybody who steps out on their marriage is a psychopath, but nobody does it the way Futoshi does it. His wife knew that he was seeing multiple women on the side, but she was unable to leave at the time because she was pregnant and under his control. As for Junko, his number one mistress, he promised her that he would marry her one day, effectively emotionally trapping her in the relationship. He would then start treating her violently, and it was not subtle. It wasn't like a scream here and a punch there. It was relentless beating, even some days, making Junko eat food off the floor. When he found her diary and read that she had a lover before him, he beat her up even more. It angered him enough to essentially mark his territory on her by burning his name into her breasts with a cigarette and forcefully tattooing his name on her thigh. I don't like to throw buzzwords around, but this is very toxic with a side of double standard. This guy was not only married, but also seeing multiple women on the side. Yet he could not stomach the idea of his mistress having had an ex-boyfriend. Junko didn't have much of a choice but to comply, because Futoshi had taken nude photos of her and constantly threatened to release them if she ever tried anything. It's easy for us to be like, "Junko, girl, leave this man." But if you've ever been in a toxic and abusive relationship, you know, it's never this easy, especially once things get worse. But what about Junko's family, her friends, and her co-workers? If the abuse was that bad, they surely must know something was going on. Maybe not directly from her, but the amount of bruises and the way her personality changed must have been very obvious. Interestingly, despite the abuse being all too obvious for people in Junko's life, they were either caught in Futoshi's charm or just afraid of him. And I do kind of get that. You might notice, but in reality, what can you do? You can't convince Junko to leave or convince Futoshi to back off. Knowing how terrible of a guy he is, you might even worry for yourself if you become a target. But in many cases, there will always be someone in your corner. And in this case, It was Junko's mother, Shizumi. She tried to intervene and break them up, but when Futoshi found out about her meddling, he showed up at Shizumi's house and sexually assaulted her. Some people's depravity knows no bounds, and this guy really deserves a special place in hell. When Junko found out, it was like the last straw that broke the camel's back. Abusing her was one thing, but to extend that abuse to her mother? Imagine the guilt. She understandably wanted to get away from it all and attempted suicide in 1985, but failed. Futoshi didn't leave her alone even then, but proceeded to convince her that her family was ashamed of her for trying to take her own life, even though it couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, she was so far gone at this point, so cut off from the rest of the rational world, that his words made sense to her. From 1985 onwards, Junko moved in with Futoshi because he probably managed to convince her she was damaged goods and she will never find another man to love her. She went on to play a crucial role in the following years of Futoshi's life, but not just as his partner in love, but also as his partner in crime. In 1983, 2 years before moving in with Junko, Futoshi took over his dad's tatami store and began selling futons. By 1985, he bought a building for this company. At this time, he had started electrocuting his employees just for fun on the soundproof third floor of the building using a stun gun, which was apparently his favorite toy. In less harmful instances, he would sneak up behind his employees and yell nonsense about spirits and ghosts. Maybe this was scary to some more religious or superstitious employees in the company, but I bet they would rather suffer these pranks than the electrocution. You might wonder, if your boss is so unhinged, why would you stay? Maybe they had little choice in employment. Maybe the paycheck was worth it. Or maybe it was just the work culture in Japan, where it is deemed a good thing to devote yourself to one company for life. You might also wonder, how did his futon company actually do? Did they actually make money? In a sense, yes. During the whole time, Futoshi had raked in about 180 million yen, but mostly through fraud and blackmail. I know, an abusive psychopathic man committing fraud? What a shocker. Things continued swimmingly for Futoshi for a while up until 1992. Maybe the police found out about the fraud, or maybe it was the many, many customers complaining about the quality of his futons. Either way, Futoshi and his beloved Junko were forced to run away to Ishikawa Prefecture and adopt fake names, effectively putting them on the nation's most wanted list. We all know that actions have consequences, but most times, people are unwilling to face the consequences of their own actions. Because it's tough. It's embarrassing. No one wants to be fined, or worse, be arrested and imprisoned. For someone like Futoshi, though, it's hard to imagine him turning himself in and admitting to his crimes. Running away is definitely more on brand. So, for a quick recap, he's committed adultery, domestic violence, rape, and all sorts of business-related crimes. It's definitely bad, but could it get worse? You bet. Things are about to get much worse. So it's been a year. The couple are still on the wanted list. Futoshi and Junko are still in hiding, trying to keep as low a profile as possible. In 1993, a married woman with 3 children fell madly in love with Futoshi. And Futoshi, being the person he was, convinced this woman that Junko was, oh, she's my sister, and that she should leave her husband and kids to run away with him. I don't know how Junko felt about this arrangement and deceit, but knowing the kind of trauma he had put upon her over the years, it's not hard to imagine him once again convincing her to go along with this plan. So given his charming ways, it's not surprising that the woman did indeed run away with him, taking her 3 kids along with her. Things were, well, merry in their marriage, or as merry as it can be given how abusive Futoshi was. In September of 1993, one of the woman's children passed away for reasons unknown. After this disturbing turn of events, the other two children were sent off to live with their father and grandfather the following month, which was definitely for the best. Throughout the entire course of their fake relationship, Futoshi had swindled the woman out of 11.8 million yen. And just a year later, in 1994, she died under mysterious circumstances, some saying suicide. Knowing Futoshi, though, it very well could have been something else. Despite being a wanted man, he managed to keep a low profile, even with a dead woman on his hands. The police, of course, became involved in this death, and they were unable to link her death to Futoshi, who would have been the most likely suspect. The autopsy conducted on the woman's body showed that she had eaten excrement before her death. But they couldn't confirm if that was the reason for the death or if she killed herself out of grief for losing one of her kids. Futoshi was not a regular person, though. Everything Futoshi did was done with precision and careful execution. He charmed not just random women, but someone with three kids. On the surface, it sounds odd. That's like three extra kids to care for and more standing in between him and the mother. But because he was good at manipulating this woman, he managed to make himself the most important person in her life, more important than her own children. Getting rid of one of the children to destabilize her and then getting rid of the other two would have been enough to plunge her into grief. Vulnerable and alone, Futoshi would have been able to have his way with her and an unobstructed path to her money. So in the end, he was not a suspect, and her death was just a tragic accident or, perhaps, suicide. Futoshi, of course, was unable to keep himself from causing harm unto others. So in 1994, after the woman's death, Futoshi moved into a condominium in Kitakyushu with Junko, a city located in Fukuoka Prefecture. It would be a good place to hide out and, of course, target his next victim. On a night out, he befriended a man named Toria Kumio. Being the smooth talker he was, Futoshi used alcohol and had no trouble gaining the man's trust and pulling out one crucial and dangerous detail from him. It seems that Kumio owed certain shady people in the city a considerable amount of money, and they were out on a hunt for him to get the dues back. Unsurprisingly, Futoshi began to use his secret against him. He threatened to inform the authorities unless Kumio did as he was told, which drove Kumio into a corner and forced him to confess to crimes he had never even committed. Using his vulnerable state against him, Futoshi forced himself into Kumio's apartment, where he lived with his daughter, who was around 8 or 9, I think. Now, for purposes of maintaining a story flow, I'm going to call his daughter KD. The list of things that took place for the next 2 years would make even the most seasoned detectives cringe. Kumio suffered mostly at the hands of his own daughter, but not because she wanted to torture her own father. She was instructed by the puppet master, Futoshi. He made KD perform the most disgusting acts on her own father, including electrocuting him and feeding him his own excrement. And that was basically the only thing Kumio got to eat. Any other food he had was food that had fallen on the floor. His wounds from getting electroshocked caused a lot of swelling, and when he wasn't being tortured, he was locked inside a cage. It's unimaginable how this can bring joy and happiness to a person, but worse than that, he forced a daughter to do this to her own father. I'm pretty sure this brought her no joy, and she also wasn't able to refuse his demands because who knows what kind of punishment would be given onto her. Especially so, since she's just a kid. And as humans, no one wants to suffer. After 2 years of constant torture, Kumio passed away on the 26th of February, 1996, when he was just 34 years old. His daughter would have been around 11 or 12 years old at the time. This is probably a good time to bring up the fact that Junko gave birth to two sons during these years. I don't know their exact birth dates, but the second son was born around the time Kumio was dying, which meant they not only had a young child witness everything, Junko was also heavily pregnant. Now it was just KD left at the mercy of Futoshi and Junko. It's sad to say, but her father really lost everything the second he decided to trust Futoshi. How could anyone have imagined this kind of outcome, though? But even when Kumio was locked away, he was still alive, and maybe in some ways, both him and his daughter had hopes of the police intervening or getting let go. But now that Kumio was dead, KD had no one in her corner. She was all alone. In normal Futoshi fashion, he was quick to get ahead of this death. Without feeling any guilt, Futoshi convinced her that she was responsible for her own father's death. He would remind her of the ways that she had tortured him, even though he knew perfectly well she would not have been able to fight him on his demands. Futoshi then made KD chop her own father up and boil his dismembered body parts in a pot while he washed on with sick glee. He even went as far as to make her drink the soup from her own dead father. As if that wasn't bad enough, Futoshi instructed her and Junko to smash whatever was left of Kumio's body and dump it in the Kunisaki Peninsula. Now with Kumio gone, KD was the unofficial new member of his little murder group. But of course, destruction is his hobby, so in no time, Futoshi started looking for his next victim. Not long after the death of Kumio, Futoshi locked in on a brand new target, a woman who used to be Kumio's acquaintance. So now that he had a new target, he turned on his charm and managed to get this woman to fall in love with him. Like the women and mistresses before her, she was also fooled into believing his promise that he would marry her one day. This time, though, he went about things a little differently in order to lend some credibility to his lies. He claimed to have graduated from Kyoto University and even falsified the documents to prove it. He played his usual mind games by showing love and being an abusive piece of shit, eventually extracting nearly 5.6 million yen from her. When she, along with her daughter, visited the apartment he shared with Junko, they were captured and held in the house, never given any food or water. Futoshi played his usual games with the captives, which also meant forcing KD and Junko to join in on the torture as well. One night, when Futoshi was asleep in the next room and KD and Junko had dozed off in their room, the woman quietly managed to sneak onto the balcony and jump. She would be left with several physical and mental scars, but she would be far away from the monster. The woman managed to make her way to a hospital and get psychiatric care, while also informing the authorities where they could find her daughter. By the time the cops got there, KD, Junko, and Futoshi were nowhere to be found. I can only assume that either KD or Junko woke up, saw that their captive woman was missing, then woke Futoshi up to run away, leaving the little girl behind. The good news is that she was brought back to her mother, and both of them lived to tell the story. The bad news? Futoshi was out there once again, probably intending to harm more people and extort more money. In case you were wondering just how involved Junko was, well, yes, this woman is definitely still part of his group. She knew everything that was going on, but because of their messed up relationship, she probably felt this sense of loyalty to him, especially after her attempted suicide, which meant she was not able to stop him, or maybe she didn't even want to. She still did everything he told her to do, taking part in pretending to be a sister and torturing his victims. She was not only a victim, but also an involuntary participant in his sick plans. It's worth mentioning that throughout the time Junko remained under captivity, Futoshi never really banned her or restricted her from going out into the world. In fact, it was Junko herself who hadn't made any real attempts to run away. Call it Stockholm Syndrome, call it love, but whatever the reason, it's safe to say she was handicapped by her own fears and worries, or perhaps, misconstrued sense of loyalty and love. That was until April 1997. Somehow, a switch flipped in her brain. I've read two versions of how this happened. The first one, Junko left to go to work, and then she just never came home. The second version states that Futoshi made Junko take their two sons to visit her parents and ask for money. When her parents refused, she left her two sons with them and then disappeared. Futoshi, of course, was furious. He tried to find her, and when all else failed, he phoned her parents, threatening to tell the authorities that their daughter was a murderer unless they told him where she was. Knowing how Junko's mother once tried to save her from this monster, I highly doubt they would have told Futoshi anything, even if they knew. When he saw that the parents were a dead end, he decided to find out for himself by playing even more tricks. And trust me, these are not regular tricks that people do. The things that he comes up with, they're almost straight out of a thriller horror movie. So what's his new plan? He basically faked his own death, and then somehow spread the news about his death and organized a fake funeral for himself, hoping to smoke her out. Maybe he knew Junko would feel safer walking the streets if she thought he was dead. But the troubles this man was willing to go through is insane. At this point, why not just call it a loss and move the hell on, go hide in some other corner of Japan? I guess he was just not the kind of person to take any types of loss. So it didn't matter what it took. He had to win. And he was right. Having heard of his death, Junko was lulled into a false sense of security. If Futoshi wasn't there, she could safely return to the apartment and get her things back. She could return to her family, hug her mother and father. But as we know, everything was a lie and Futoshi was waiting for her. Who knew how long he had to play dead, stay indoors and not make any noise? I can just imagine him sitting in the couch, in complete darkness, pretending no one was home for days. Really creepy. When she entered through the door, possibly feeling safe and relieved, he was there, waiting for her. And as soon as she shut and locked the door behind her, he pounced, like some animal finally catching their prey. During this time, Junko's family hadn't heard a peep from her. All they knew was that Futoshi couldn't find her. While that was some kind of comfort to them, it still didn't answer the question of where she was. So, when Futoshi reached out to them to inform them that he had found her and punished her, Junko's family tearfully offered him 63 million yen for her safe return. Futoshi was no romantic. He readily accepted the money and the terms and agreed to release Junko back to her family.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice.
But was it that easy? Since Futoshi is not the type of guy to admit defeat or keep his word, there was no way he didn't have some other type of trick up his sleeve. Junko caused unnecessary problems in his life, and he refused to let it slide. He held a grudge. When Futoshi arrived at Junko's parents' house to return her, instead of taking the money and calling it a day, he turned right around and held them all captive in their own home. He essentially moved in with the family, with his two sons and KD still tagging along behind him. What followed was nothing but unimaginable physical and mental agony. The period at Junko's house was probably Futoshi's breaking point, which led to his most infamous set of murders. It's unbelievable how he managed this, but even under his capture, the Ogata family eventually became absolutely enamored with him. He gained their loyalty and trust with baffling ease, and as crazy as it sounds, they were like putty in his hands. Reiko and Kazuya, Junko's sister and brother-in-law, both began to see Futoshi as a prophet-like figure, a man sent from God. This couple also had two young children in the household, so that makes 6 adults and 5 children in total. This spell he cast on them blinded them so much that Kazuya saw nothing wrong with Futoshi having sex with his wife right in front of him. In fact, it's possible Kazuya liked to watch and saw Futoshi's act as a gift to them. Futoshi would flirt with all the women in the house while having many alcohol-induced discussions with the men, which, as we know, it can cause people to form bonds. He also raped the women in the house, lying to Junko about it, which caused her to grow suspicious, but at the same time, keeping her jealous and loyal. Futoshi could probably have convinced him that the sky was green and pigs could fly at this point. He found immense joy in manipulating those around him, which probably fed into his ego. As fun and exciting as it could be, he grew tired of this and wanted to move on from the Ogata family. He had their money, had their trust and love, and even the women in the household. So now that he was tired and the game was over, it was time for business. The final act began on the 21st of December, 1997, 5 months into having held the family hostage. Futoshi ordered Junko to electrocute her 61-year-old father, Takashige, to death. Next up was Shizumi, Junko's mother. Her mental state was unraveling every day, and it actually began way back when her daughter first met this monstrous man. But after her husband's death, she was finally pushed to her limits, and, to be fair, who wouldn't be? In January of 1998, her distress started to show when she began speaking in strange voices, much to Futoshi's irritation. When he'd had enough, he ordered his most loyal followers, Reiko and Kazuya, to strangle her to death. Junko watched as her mother's life left her eyes, but couldn't do anything to prevent it. With both parents out of the way, Futoshi now found it much easier to manage his remaining victims. Next was Reiko, whom Kazuya strangled with his own hands while their own daughter, Aya, held her down. Later, Kazuya himself was locked up in the bathroom, where he died of starvation after 2 months. The cruelties were unrelenting. Aya and Junko were then ordered to electrocute Aya's brother, Yuki, who was only 5 years old at the time. After he died from constant trauma, KD strangled 10-year-old Aya with her bare hands. In the end, the only group left alive in this broken home were the original trio, Futoshi, Junko, and KD. His 2 sons as well, but it didn't really seem like he involved them in this rampage. Be honest, this sounds fake, doesn't it? If you think about it, this man did not kill anyone himself. He ordered the adults and the children to kill each other off, and somehow, everyone did as they were told. What kind of charm could lead a small group of people to do this? The remains of each victim were carefully picked apart and then boiled in pots. Some even alleged that cannibalism took place. And as usual, Futoshi, in his typical fashion, blamed the massacre on Junko, the last surviving member of her torn family. Soon, the stench of the corpses became impossible to hide, so after the last of the remains were disposed of, the three of them renovated the condo. For someone like him, though, nothing was ever enough. So out he went to seek out new victims. Around mid-2000, a woman fell into his radar and he, again, managed to charm her. He made all the empty promises about marrying her and taking her own kids as his own. Yes, she also had children. A set of twins, actually. In no time, she moved into the Ogata household and gave him 20 million yen. As for her kids, she handed them over to Futoshi and Junko, where the quote-unquote brother and sister duo promised to take care of them, which was obviously a lie. Physically and emotionally, he and Junko would do less than the bare minimum to take care of them. He had the 2 kids locked up and would then give them each 1 slice of bread to eat a day. And, this should be no surprise to anybody, hardly ever made an effort to bond with them. These 2 kids were basically just locked away, probably because Futoshi didn't have the patience or capacity to deal with them. So he just kind of hoped they would waste away and die. But because so much death has already taken place, here's a good spoiler. The two kids and their mother made it out alive in the end, but nothing is known about where they are or how they're doing. I want to think they managed to go back to living a normal life, privately and far away from the media and cameras. I wouldn't be surprised if they are traumatized and require therapy, but hopefully they are doing okay. While Futoshi kept going out to find new would-be brides, KD was secretly plotting her escape from this hell. At this point, she had been held captive by Futoshi for 6 years or so, which is a long time considering her age. Despite going along with everything he planned, deep down, she was suffering and wanted out. She made her first escape attempt on the 30th of January, 2002. She was successful, but it didn't last long, because he found her just 2 weeks later. As punishment, he pulled her back into the condo, kicking and screaming, then tied her to a chair. As she continued to struggle, Futoshi electrocuted her while Junko ripped off her toenails, one by one. This would break anybody's resolve, but KD was not ready to give up, so she tried again. On March 6th of that same year, 2002, the 17-year-old managed to escape again. She went to the police. Maybe you're wondering why she didn't go the first time. Maybe she was scared. Maybe she didn't know if they would believe her or take her seriously. Maybe she was only focused on keeping herself alive away from Futoshi. Or maybe the cops would be like, oh, we must return you to your guardian and take her back to Futoshi themselves. Imagine that. And think about it. The trauma she experienced over the years was intense. So it's not really easy to say, well, why don't you just do the logical thing? What even is logic at that point? Thankfully, though, the police did take her seriously. The police showed up at the Ogata household the following day, and both Futoshi and Junko were arrested, and the two children, the twins, were freed. Hallelujah. Initially, though, the police thought this was a simpler case of just kidnapping kids, which is fair, because that's what they found at the crime scene. But after the arrest, real information started to come out, and whoa, not at all what they were expecting. Every horrible thing that took place finally came to light, and understandably, it shocked everyone to their core. Their neighbors noticed things were odd as well. They smelled odd smells, heard odd sounds, but who could have guessed it was something of this magnitude? Futoshi and Junko were both seen as responsible for the deaths and torture of multiple people, and they were charged with the murder of Junko's parents, Junko's sister and brother-in-law, Junko's niece Aya and nephew Yuki, and last but not least, KD's father, Kumio. Possibly being broken from all the years spent being Futoshi's pawn, Junko finally confessed to everything in an eerily calm tone, as if she was just retelling a story she saw online or a movie she watched. I can't really say where her mental state was at that point, but probably it wasn't good. Futoshi, being the piece of shit that he is, continued to insist that he was innocent and that Junko was making up stories about him. The problem was that KD also provided a statement and testified in court, and her account matched up with that of Junko's. Unfortunately, though, the police were never able to recover any human remains. All evidence had already been dismembered, cooked, and discarded prior to the arrest, and recovering any of that was pretty much impossible. In a sense, this was a no-body crime, but despite no remains being found, they had enough compelling evidence to charge them both for the murders. This horror story finally came to an end on September 28, 2005. Futoshi would receive his long overdue sentence, death by hanging. Junko was also found guilty and given the same sentence, but after an appeal, one of the charges against her was dropped, which was the murder of her own father. It was considered manslaughter. If you recall, her father died from electroshock torture. The appeal basically said, well, it wasn't a direct death. He didn't die immediately from the shocks, but died afterwards, though likely from the torture. To me, this kind of sounds like if you beat someone to near death and walk away, you technically did not kill them. If they died from their injuries later, that's manslaughter. Which is slightly different from beating them to death. Does that make sense? Yeah, laws are weird, but that's what it sounds like to me. Because of this, Junko's sentence was changed to just life imprisonment. Honestly, I'm quite conflicted about Junko. On one hand, it was obvious that she was forced to do what she did for fear of terrible abuse at the hands of this infamous mind-control serial killer. She was definitely psychologically tormented and possibly suffered from Stockholm Syndrome. But on the other hand, she did make the conscious choice of escaping that one time, so it should mean that she was unhappy and possibly knew they were doing bad things, right? I'm obviously no psychiatrist or psychologist, so do not quote me on anything. Stories have a way of getting out, and with something this shocking, you bet it made its round around the nation. At first, though, the media didn't dare report on these crimes, maybe for fear for their lives. What if Futoshi was found innocent? Would he come after all these people who slandered him? But once Futoshi was handed the death sentence and safely locked away, several Japanese writers came forward with their thoughts. One of these accounts captured the nation's powerful sentiments in its words. The piece contained parts of KD's exact confessions to the police. Written on the 7th of October, 2005, the article describes Junko and Futoshi as, quote, bloodthirsty, sadomasochistic lovers, unquote. The writer believed that their sins were too great to be resolved with a single death sentence, and they deserved far worse for what they inflicted on KD and the other victims. The article also mentioned that the couple didn't show any signs of stopping their acts, and had it not been for KD's courage in escaping and stepping forward and speaking her truth, they could have likely continued on till they got too old to kill. Further discussions with KD brought more horrific things about Futoshi to light, specifically how disgusting his fantasies had gotten with time. This includes convincing Shizumi to take part in a simulated rape and using a stun gun on 10-year-old Aya's genitals to shock her, are just two of his unimaginable acts. When investigators searched their home, they found several pornographic photos and videos he had taken of naked women, likely including those of Junko's mom, sister, and niece. Not everything in the article is doom and gloom, though, because the article shared how KD was well on the way to mental and physical recovery. She let loose and unpacked all of the trauma she'd suffered for years and years, both being the torturer and the tortured under the hands of Futoshi and Junko. Before her father died, KD said that they were forced to punch each other, and if they did not comply, they would be punished with a stun gun. They would have buckets of ice water poured over their heads while locked in the bathroom in the winter seasons. Years of being treated like shit at the hands of Junko and Futoshi bred pure hatred for the two in KD's heart, which is, of course, understandable. I don't know them personally, and I can't even tell you how this episode enrages me. Fortunately, after having escaped this absolute nightmare of an existence, KD began to find her feet in the world. She went to night school and even got a part-time job. At 18, she got her license, and everything was falling into place. At 21, the girl who brought Japan's most cruel, most infamous killer couple to justice finally got to see light and hope in her life again. Let's also not forget that Futoshi and Junko may have killed a few other people prior to the Ogata family massacre. There was a mom and a child who died under mysterious circumstances, and while it was never proved to be their doing, it's kind of hard to imagine them not being involved. At the very least, we know that Futoshi caused the death of at least 7 people, and I say cause because it seems like all the victims died at the hands of others, never directly from Futoshi. As for Futoshi's wife, she was probably his first victim. Unlike Junko, though, she saw through his bullshit and mind games and planned to leave him. But his tight control on her and the fact that they had a child together made it difficult at first. I guess he was pretty distracted entertaining so many different women, so his first wife did manage to escape with their child and eventually sent him divorce papers. When she was later interviewed on the whole Futoshi and Junko crimes, she stated that, quote, "If I hadn't escaped him, my family would have been murdered, just like Junko's was. I feel so sorry for Junko," unquote. One other piece of information that I cannot be super sure of is that Futoshi and Junko had two sons. They were very young at the time of the arrest, and it is said that they went on to live in a welfare institution. I cannot confirm this piece of info, as not all sources indicate this, so I'm just going to leave it here. Last thing I want to mention is pop culture. With a crime like this, you bet there's a movie that was inspired by Matsunaga Futoshi. This movie can be found on Netflix, I think, though it might depend on which country you're watching from. It's called The Forest of Love, which, by the name of it, does not sound very scary at all. I looked it up and the general idea is the same, where a very charming and beloved man manipulates people into doing terrible things. The main character is played by Shina Kippe, an actor I really like, so I'm gonna see if I can find it later and give it a go. If you've watched it, let me know what you think. So, there you have it. The serial killer infamous for his mind games and ability to kill people without actually doing anything himself, which gives heavy Charles Manson vibes. I think cases like these can really show the insane realities of our world. We're normally so logged into our own versions of reality, with work or school or chores, that we forget how far gone the human mind can become under certain circumstances. Which makes sense. How many of you actually know anyone like this in real life? Someone who could charm anything out of you, get you to do their bidding, even if it goes against everything you were taught. I wouldn't say he's really attractive. He looks pretty regular, like some random Japanese dude you might see on the street. This just goes to show how crazy manipulative he is. He's a charming man. He knows how to talk to women. He's definitely got the moves. But obviously, he is far from genuine and everything is just a game to him. Futoshi grew up with people loving him for his charm and intelligence. He might have made it as a movie star or a really successful businessman, maybe public speaker or a politician. So why did he choose the path that he did? I believe he knew that he was good at manipulating people, and he definitely enjoyed inflicting pain onto others. Maybe he was too lazy to go the legal route, so he decided to cheat, lie, manipulate, and kill. Quick reward, but heavy punishment. Both Futoshi and Junko are still sitting in prison, and according to one of Futoshi's sons, Futoshi is said to be suffering from blindness caused by diabetes. I don't know if he will ever get his execution, but either way, I hope his death is very painful and may he rot in hell. This was a rather graphic and exhausting case, and I feel so drained. Anyway, thank you for sticking with me, and remember, always be wary of strangers. Be nice, be wary, and stay safe. Till next time.